Originally, I wasn't going to preach through the 23rd Psalm, which seems ridiculous because it's the Psalm of the Psalms, but I figured we all know the 23rd Psalm. It's the Psalm of the Psalms. But as I have researched and studied and contemplated the Psalms over these last few months, there's good reason the 23rd Psalm is so beloved. There's good reason that every funeral you go to, whether people have a church background or not, they want the 23rd Psalm read. There's good reason that many of us know it, some of us perfectly, some of us not so perfectly, by memory. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. It is beautiful poetry. And more than being beautiful poetry, it is an astounding song of faith. You know, we've been looking at the Psalms of Lament through the Lent time and looking at how all the psalmists, the ones who were pouring their hearts out, who were broken, who were struggling in so many different ways, they were able to take it and lay it all before God. And then after laying it before God, they were able to choose faith. They were able to choose to leave it at the throne of God and trust that God would take care of them and take care of all their troubles. And they could do that because of Psalm 23, this incredible psalm, likely written by David himself as he was a rebel, as he was escaping the wrath of King Saul, who wanted to kill him. And David and his various compatriots were forced to live in the caves and the caverns and the fields out there, where there would have been sheep dotting the landscape everywhere that he looked. Here's a guy who had a price on his head, and he penned these incredible words. So all we're going to do this morning is go through it. And there's a bit of extended time after we go through the psalm itself for just to sit with it for a while. Because I think this is one of those psalms that you can let the words wash over you and come up in you. And it brings healing and it brings hope and it brings assurance, whatever it is that's burdening you today. If you want to follow it in your pew Bibles, look to page 501 in the Old Testament. We will be going through it line by line. I didn't put anything up on PowerPoint, so you have to work a little harder. So page 501 in the Bibles in the pews if you want to follow, but you may not need to. It starts this way. It starts, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." You know, you've got that image that Jesus tells. He tells this parable of how a shepherd has a whole flock of sheep, and one of those sheep goes wandering away, and he leaves the 99 to go find the one. And the artists have made pictures of it, where you've got this little lamb who's stuck in the brambles and got himself into trouble, and the shepherd comes along and pulls him out and brings him back to the rest of the flock, restores him. And as I meditate on the 23rd Psalm, I think, I wander away all the time. I am just such a dumb sheep that I wander all the time. Jesus says, this is where we are. This is the place where there's food. This is the place where there's safety. And I look over the hill and I see, oh, that grass over there, that looks pretty sweet. And so I want to go away from what I've got over here and go check out that. And the shepherd might be saying, no, this is really good. And I'm going, yeah, but that's better. I know, I'm a sheep. But here's the thing, sheep never know what's better. Oh, what does sheep know? They know this blade of grass right here. They know, like, the sister sheep right next to them just butted them in the head. You know, they know that in the summer they get really hot, so somebody comes along and takes the wool off, much like somebody did to Mark Rapley's head this week. I don't know. Sheep don't know anything. They don't have the big picture. They don't know where the best grass is. They maybe think they do, and so they wander off to find it. The shepherd knows where the best grass is. The shepherd knows where the wolves are hiding and where the lions are stalking and where the safety is. The shepherd stays awake while the sheep are in their pen for the night and guards them with security. And so the sheep can go to sleep without a thought in the world. We wander, and still he comes to draw us back in. Tirelessly, he is our shepherd, even when we are just dumb sheep never learning our lesson, always sure that the grass is greener over there or the sky is bluer over there, and we think we've got it all figured out. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. You know, this psalm is pretty neat because it's all spoken from the perspective of the sheep. At no point does it change voices. It's all about the sheep. It's all about David, who's there in the wilderness, who's been anointed by God. And God said, you are going to be the next great king of Israel. You are my chosen one. Even though you were just a shepherd boy, I'm going to raise you up and you are going to lead these people. And Israel is going to know what it is to be a nation that's reckoned with. He has that in his head, and he's sitting there in a cave somewhere, likely a little bit wet, a little bit hungry, wondering how on earth this could possibly be true, when the reality is the current king wants to destroy him, has armies sent out hunting for him. But David knows he's just a sheep, and he can trust the shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. Whatever version you look at, he makes me. Here's the thing. We aren't very good at taking naps. We are like the three-year-old who, when they're told you need to take a nap, is going to kick and scream and fight and then likely fall asleep in the middle of the tantrum. Now, when we get to be adults, like, don't you like naps now? Sue, wouldn't you like to have a nap just this afternoon? Yes. We like naps. But we don't really rest very well. The Old Testament, over and over and over again, the number one commandment that's told, besides you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, is you shall keep the Sabbath holy. The Sabbath is a day of rest. The Sabbath is a day set apart to just enjoy God, to just enjoy the life that he's given. Every 7 days, God says, I want you to stop it all. I want you to stop the to and fro and the busy and the this and that and the all over the place. And I want you to just sit by quiet waters. Just rest in green pastures and let me love you. Let my joy just overflow you. How many of us take a full day off of all the craziness, even once a week? My guess is there might be one. Who are you? If you do that, could you lift your hand and you're going to teach the rest of us? Okay. Because we're not very good at that. Because our culture says you are worth something if you're doing stuff. If you're busy, that's a badge of honor. In fact, how many times do you say to somebody, wow, you know, what have you been doing? And they start to rhyme off their things. Say, wow, you're really busy. Yes, I am. Aren't I important? No. The punishment in the Old Testament for not keeping the Sabbath holy is death. And we think that sounds a little harsh. But let me tell you, if you don't work rest, if you don't lie down in green pastures as a regular part of your life, it's going to kill you. Not because God is angry and he's going to smite you with lightning, but because our bodies and our souls and our brains need rest. It's not this heavy-handed punishment of the Old Testament. It's just simple fact. Keep the Sabbath. Every 7 days, take a day, rest, enjoy me. Let me fill you back up again. That's the secret to having abundant life. That's what I want for you. And we don't do it. He makes us lie down in green pastures. I can't count the number of people who live such busy lives that suddenly illness strikes and they can't do anything. I had a friend who once woke up and just couldn't get out of bed. His back had completely seized up. He spent the next three months lying on his back before he could even engage in physiotherapy to get it better. And he knew. He said, I didn't take any time off. So God forced some time off on me. It happens over and over and over again. And David knew it. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He doesn't invite us to lie down in green pastures. He makes you lie down in green pastures. If we don't keep the Sabbath, he'll keep it for us. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. We can lie down in green pastures because we're not the ones in charge. It's not us who have to keep the wolves at bay. The shepherd takes care of that. We can go into our pen at night and we can close our eyes and we can rest because the Lord is our shepherd. He leads me beside still waters. So he says, okay, stop. I'm going to make you lie down in green pastures. Once you've stopped, then he can lead. In both of the leadership courses that I'm teaching with people in our church this year, over and over and over again, I find myself saying, leaders, God-like, godly leaders, have to always be followers first. That's one of the biggest differences between Christian leaders and any other kind of leader, is that we believe that our leadership has to come out of following Christ first. So there's Christ, I'm following, and that's how I lead. He leads me beside still waters. Once I've actually stopped and rested in the green pastures and been able to be refreshed, only then can I be led by him. And where does he lead me? It just gets better. He leads me beside still waters, places of refreshment and restoration. Yeah, sometimes, you know, sometimes he leads us into the battlefield. Sometimes he leads us into places of pain. But right here, David, hiding in a cave, hunted by King Saul, he makes me lie down in green pastures, and then he leads me beside still waters. How long before we stop fighting it and just step into the peace that he offers? And then, after he makes us lie down, after he leads us to those still waters, he restores my soul. Some of you are just, your souls are weary, aren't they? I know, because you tell me your stories. And we're weary. There's just been too much pain. There's just been too much broken around you. There's too much loss. There's too much grief. There's too much hopelessness or loneliness or whatever else it is. And your soul is weary. It's not the kind of thing that a nap can fix or a vacation or a cruise can fix. It's something deeper. It's a soul weariness. Well, let me tell you, the only solution to that is when your shepherd makes you lie down and then leads you. And then he restores your soul. He starts to knit back together all the things that are broken. He starts to breathe his breath deep into you to fill you up again. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. And then what does he do when I've been restored? He leads me in right paths for his name's sake. You know, you've got the picture of this sheep that has wandered away, that's gone looking for better grass. And the shepherd comes along and he says, stop it. Lie down right here for a second because you're injured. And I need to set your leg because you broke it in the brambles. Lie down. And then he says, it's all set. Now come with me. I'm going to take you to a better place. And the sheep stumbles along with its little set leg. Goes to the place of quiet waters, where the shepherd just feeds him, gives pure, clean water to drink, stays up all night with his rod there to beat away the wild animals so the sheep can just sleep until it's recovered. And then he leads him back home, leads him in right paths. Why? For his name's sake. See, here's the thing. There's a lot of me in this. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. But in fact, it's not really about me. It's about him. Who's doing all the work? We don't have to do anything. Who's doing all the work? He makes me lie down. He leads me. He restores me. He leads me again. He's the one who does all the work. We sheep, we think we've got it all figured out and we can take care of things. And you know, in some of us, it's well-intentioned. We don't want to bother God with all of this. You know, shepherd, you've got like 100 sheep to worry about. I can take care of myself. Don't worry about me. I'll find the next patch of grass. I've got it covered. I'm nice and strong. Until we find ourselves in the brambles. And we are reminded yet again that it's about him. That our job is to follow. His job is to lead. His job is to make us lie down. His job is to be in control. Our job is to follow. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I love the King James, which says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. We are secure in the care of the great shepherd. It's like God has these monstrously big hands, and we can sit in them, and we can walk around in them, and they're cupped just perfectly, so we can't fall out of them. He's got us secure. So even when we're walking through the darkest valley, even when it's a valley where the shadow of death looms over us, we are secure in the hands of God. We are secure in the care of the great shepherd as he guides us, maybe through a narrow cavern surrounded by mountains on either side where predators might be hiding in the nooks and crannies of the rocks. We don't have to be afraid walking through there, because the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. 1 John 4:18 says, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. What's the remedy for our fear? It's the love of the shepherd. It's letting ourselves be loved by the shepherd. It's letting him do it and us just following along. And then these great words, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. The rod and the staff, you know, the shepherd's crook, which is kind of shaped like this, which as the sheep starts to wander away, he reaches out, snags it by the neck and pulls it back into the flock. You ever felt that? Where you were wandering a little bit and you felt the yank of God tugging at your head? It's not so pleasant. It's discipline. So God, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to be one of your sheep. But I'm not going to bother you. I'm going to go my own way. And maybe just tell everybody that I'm kind of going the same way as you're going. Your rod and your staff, the tools of discipline. He says, they comfort me. You know, I was struck by the fact that we have a history in this church of a number of people who were born into families that failed at being families for them, that failed at loving them as the children in their families. And those people have found other families. It's one of my favorite things about this church is the way you envelop lost people and you knit this kind of web of love around them that they can't get out of. And over again, when I see this happen, I also see the rebelling that comes from that person who's been stuck in that web because they aren't used to having somebody love them enough to discipline them or love them enough to hold them accountable. You know? One of the easy things when nobody cares about you is that nobody cares if you do your best. Nobody cares if you succeed. Nobody really cares what happens to you. And as soon as you find yourself in a family that loves you and cares for you, discipline is part of it. But your rod and your staff, they comfort me because they give me a sense that I won't be allowed to just wander away. You know, if I submit myself to God's discipline, then I'm only going to get this far before his shepherd's crook pulls me back in. It's only an unloving shepherd that doesn't care until I go so far that it's killed me. Perfect love casts out fear. Your rod and staff comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Here's David again hiding in the caves, lost, broken, wondering what on earth God is up to in all of this. You prepare a table before me. He knows that the enemies aren't necessarily going to go away. The good shepherd doesn't kill all the wolves and all of the lions and all of the bears who are out there. But the shepherd does provide even in the presence of those enemies, does provide life, does provide nourishment, does provide rest, does provide restoration. Right in the middle of the enemy camp, it can be yours. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. The anointing with oil was a setting apart. This was how kings were made. oil was poured over their heads and would flow down around them. And it was a symbolic gesture of saying, you have been set apart for some kind of act of God. And the psalmist is saying, you anoint my head with oil. We have all been set apart to be not just anybody's sheep, but sheep of the great shepherd, sheep of the good shepherd. We have been set apart for something extraordinary. We've been set apart to live out the realities of the kingdom of God in the world that we live in. You anoint my head with oil. Even though everything seems like it's all fallen apart, you anoint my head with oil. You set me apart. You call me by name. I am your sheep. I'm part of this flock. I'm branded with your insignia. My cup overflows. I just can't contain everything that you give me. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. Isn't this why we love this psalm at funerals? It reminds us that this life, here and now, isn't the end of it. This isn't it. We stand up there at a funeral and we speak these words, or we hear these words, I will dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. Whatever besets you, whatever pulls you apart, whatever kills you does not end your life, because the house of the Lord is there for you to dwell in for all of eternity. That place where you are in the presence of God Almighty, who loves you beyond our ability to imagine. Whatever is plaguing you today, you are invited to relax into the provision and the love that God has for you. God, who is the good shepherd, who lays down his life for the sheep. This psalm of all the psalms calls us to rest, to breathe deep of the love the shepherd has for you. A love that casts out fear. A love that comes with discipline. But a love that fills your cup to overflowing.